Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. First segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Anne Mullen from the University of Windsor. She'll be giving us an update on some of their most recent accessibility advancements. So tell me a little bit about some of the latest accessibility happenings.
Thanks, Cam. It's good to be here. One of the big things that we're working on this year at the university is a complete accessibility audit of the university's web presence. So this has been something that our Accessible Information and Communication Committee has been discussing for the past 2 years. And we're really happy to have been able to secure funding to have a vendor come out who specializes in web audits related to accessibility. Have them come out and perform the audit on all of the U Windsor web presence. So the work is being done right now, and it's going to take about 4 months to complete the project. But they'll be reviewing everything from the main pages to the applications that students and employees use. And with that, they're going to be providing us with a lot of valuable information about where we're at currently, where there are deficiencies in accessibility, and what we can do to improve, and also some long-term strategies so that we can ensure that as technology changes over time and we implement new programs or develop new web pages, that we're doing it with the highest level of accessibility and inclusiveness. So we're really excited about this. And there's two pieces folks should know about ensuring web accessibility. One is that the pages themselves are developed to have to be accessible, so screen readers can access the information, the layout, all of those pieces are put in place. But the other piece, which is very important that folks don't often think about, is the people who are adding content to the pages, are they doing so in a manner that is inclusive and accessible? So I'll give you an example. When somebody adds a picture to a web page, if they don't put an alt tag on there, then a person who's using a screen reader wouldn't be able to access the information. And what an alt tag is it's a verbal or a written description of the picture. So, you know, if you have a picture on there that's conveying some information, if you don't have it written out, you've just prevented your audience who's using screen readers from being able to have access to that information. So we're really working hard to determine, okay, where are the gaps? Is it in the development of the pages? Is it where the content's being added? And then working to ensure that we move forward in implementing methods to have fully accessible web pages and web services.
So, do you anticipate any challenges in all this work?
Well, not so much challenges, but there will be work that comes from the project. I mean, we automatically anticipate that there will be a fair bit of training that needs to come out of this so that folks who are adding the content understand how they add it in an accessible manner. You know, each department has someone who's responsible for adding content, and there are so many departments across campus that we've got to make sure that everybody has the training. And with that, too, we also likely will find that documents that are online haven't been set up properly, so providing training around that. So really what we anticipate is likely there's going to be some deficiencies that we need to address, and then there's going to be work that comes out of this to ensure that we're providing the training that's necessary to have these pages be set up properly.
So, in terms of laying the framework as you described it, Do you think it'll be easier going forward, just now that you have a plan of accessibility to build on for new content?
That's the intention, is that you really can't move forward with things if you don't know where you are. And so we want to get a snapshot of where we're at right now to understand, are we doing well? Are we doing just okay? Do we have a lot of deficiencies? And we don't know that. So that's one of the driving pieces of this project. And then, as I say, the other piece is, how are we going to do moving forward and making sure that we have training and systems set up so that in the future we're ensuring that our pages and our web services are inclusive to anybody who wants to access the information.
So how has the community responded to this here on campus?
Oh, really well. And it's been a joint project across campus. I mean, we have folks from many different departments that are participating in the project and getting all of the information put together for the company that's doing the audit. And I overall, it's very well received, because I think most people who have awareness around accessibility recognize that we should be doing periodic reviews of how we're doing so that we know, okay, is there a problem, or what do we need to do to really ensure that everybody is accessing the information. And it's also that proactive piece too. We don't want to only make changes to things when we receive complaints. And we haven't really received any complaints about the web accessibility, but that doesn't mean there aren't problems and there aren't folks out there that are experiencing issues, but they just, you know, it's not worth the effort to complain about it. So we're, like I say, trying to be proactive and as we move forward, really working to develop a web presence that is accessible.
So, in terms of the definition of accessibility, this company is going to look at all major aspects. But what was it that ultimately sparked this need for change, this need to upgrade?
Well, I think it was a university initiative, and it was through the Information and Communication Committee that there have been a number of discussions about, do we know how accessible our web pages are? And you know, we don't. We can run some big services that will give us some information, but we need a lot more detailed information, because the reality is there are thousands and thousands of web pages out there that we just don't have the resources to audit ourselves. So having a company come in that specializes in this made sense, that they have the resources to do that so we can have a more comprehensive understanding of what's going on.
So if you could send any one message about the need for this, about the importance of reaching all students in an equal way, what would you say?
I would say that, so the direction that society is going now is that most people, when they want to access information, are going directly onto the web. So what we want to do is ensure that any information we're providing through our web, all students, all employees, anybody in the community can access in a fair, equitable way. So with this, we're working to ensure that as we move forward, our web pages and the content that's added is done in a way that everybody can access it. And with that, you know, we welcome the feedback. So if there's anybody within the community or anybody who's accessing our pages who is experiencing difficulties with it, let us know. We have an email set up. It's accessibility@uwindsor.ca. So folks are welcome to email us, let us know where the issues are, and you know, we can fix those. But with this, it's not that we're looking for just the remediation of identifying errors and there are problems and then we're going to fix them. What we're looking at is, as we develop things in the future, that these new pieces that are developed will automatically have the accessibility and the inclusiveness built into them so that there won't be issues that arise in the future.
So in that sense, it's sort of putting accessibility first, making it less of an afterthought, less of a, oh, we need to do this, and this.
That's exactly it. It's part of what we do, and it just makes sense. So, you know, as we have a more diverse campus, everybody can access the information that we need. Everybody feels included. That's the priority, and that's been one of the driving forces here. So yeah, we're really excited about this. As I say, the committee's been talking about this for over 2 years, looking to get this done, and when we were able to secure funding to get it done, we were just elated that we're going to be moving forward with this. So, you know, in our information, the final reports, we should be receiving them later in the fall, and perhaps I can come back and we can talk about that and provide the community with some information.
You'd certainly be welcome. Now, you also mentioned you're looking to encourage students to take a more active role.
Yes, yeah. So right now we're recruiting for our 2015-2016 accessibility committees, and we would like and welcome to have student members on our committees. We have six committees in total that we're looking for student members, and we do have a number of student members right now, but we're always looking for new perspectives, input, and fresh ideas. So this is really a reach out to the community to let folks know that if they're interested, we welcome them to contact our office to join one of our committees. Again, they can folks can email us at accessibility@uwindsor.ca. And we can connect. And those six committees that we have, five of them are around the AODA standards. So we have an accessible customer service committee and an accessible built environment committee. And they focus on certain aspects of the AODA. One piece is ensuring that we're compliant, but the other piece is a driving force here is we don't want to just be compliant. We want to surpass the legislation wherever possible. So these committees work at more of the grassroots level to look at where are their current issues, but also what can we do to move things forward to make this potentially the most inclusive campus on in Canada. I mean, that would be fantastic. And then the other committee that we're recruiting for is the Campus Accessibility Coordinating Committee. And the purpose of that committee is to coordinate a number of projects that those standards-based committees are working on, and also to share information so that these committees aren't working in a silo, but rather there is that sharing of information and folks are aware of projects and things that are happening on campus. So yes, just wanted to come out and say to the campus community that if anybody is interested in joining one of the committees, we welcome you to contact our office and set up a time to come out and learn more about the committees.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this.
Thank you.
Of course. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Statistics say that one in four people will be the victims of bullying, while others say that everyone has been bullied at some point in their lives. Statistics aside, if you're being bullied, you're not alone. UFated anti-bullying website, bullyingcanada.ca, knows just what you're going through and can help you out. They can lift the weight off your shoulders and give you some useful tips on how to stop the bullying. What you're going through isn't a normal part of growing up, and it isn't right. Something can be done to make it stop. If you need to talk, bullyingcanada.ca will be there.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Anne Mullen from the University of Windsor. So tell me a little bit about Southlands Therapeutic Riding.
Well, Southlands Therapeutic Riding is a medium-sized therapeutic riding facility. And it's located in Vancouver. It's actually quite a special place because it's located in the located in the heart of a city, but it's situated on a small heritage farm. So it encompasses the therapeutic riding and also a regular riding program, but it also has a working farm.
So, can you tell me a little bit about the practice of therapeutic riding, the benefits?
Well, the benefits of therapeutic riding are they benefit riders who are physically, cognitively, and emotionally challenged. For riders who are physically challenged, the movement of the horse stimulates postural and muscular reactions. Riding a horse develops trust with riders and that fosters a great deal of self-esteem and confidence, which is then reflected into other areas of the writer's life.
So, in your time with Southlands, have there been any challenges?
We do have challenges. Southlands in itself faces a number of, and Stars itself faces a number of particular challenges. We are, because we're in a built-up area, we do have quite a lot of traffic, and quite a lot of our program takes place out in the community on the roads. Riders ride around the area, and that has a lot of value, but it also creates challenges riding in an area of relatively high traffic. So that's definitely one of the challenges that we face. Also, because we have a regular riding program that we share space with, one of our big challenges is integrating our therapeutic riding program with the regular riding program.
So, to look at the converse side of things, in your time with Stars, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
Yes, most definitely. I would have to say that on a daily basis, I personally witness success. But there are definitely a number of my students who have not just reached their goals, but surpassed their goals and also the goals that I would set for them also. I've witnessed great change in one particular rider who was physically challenged, who has gone from being a quite curled up in her actual physical position to now being very much upright, and not having had being able to use the strength in her legs, and now able to actually begin walking on just with the use of a frame or cane. And that is a huge change in her lifetime, and has afforded her a great deal more freedom in her life.
So, how do you go about spreading the word about the work of Stars?
That's a really good question. The word spreads a lot of the time through word of mouth. So individuals who have come to the program, or their caregivers and family and friends, see the changes happening in their lives, and so the word is spread throughout their own community just by the experiences that the riders who come are experiencing. But also we do quite a lot of fundraising, and we would advertise our fundraising within the local community, and that does bring interest. The other way is that we actually utilize a lot of volunteers in our program. The program actually wouldn't exist without volunteers. And we have a wide catchment of volunteers because we are located in a city. And our volunteers benefit greatly from just working with the riders and the horses, and that impact on their lives. And then that in turn, they talk about their experiences, and that helps greatly in getting the word out about our program.
So, if you could send any one message about the need for a program such as this, what would you say?
I would say it's invaluable. There is a huge need for therapeutic riding programs right across the country. Every therapeutic riding program that opens becomes very widely used and very quickly fills up and has a wait list. Our program and many programs in the lower mainland area have wait lists, and so there is a real need for it. And I think helping to fund programs like this is really important.
So what are the next steps for Southlands?
The next step for Southlands, we are actually actively looking for another riding ring. We have partial use of a riding ring, but we would really like to have more access to a riding ring, and that will help us expand what we do with our current students, but it'll also help us have more students. We're also working on raising more funds. Most of our fundraising goes into sponsoring riders, and the more we can fundraise, the more riders we can sponsor. And one of our other goals is also to include equine-assisted therapy programs that are offered, that are not on the horse, but are actually offered with horses but working on the ground. And so that's another part of our program that we'd like to expand.
So do you work in partnership with any other organizations?
Well, we do work in partnership with the medical profession. Each one of our riders is required to be referred by a physician. But a lot of those riders also work with physiotherapists, occupational therapists, and we do integrate with those individuals for each rider based on the needs and the input that's required from each of those medical practitioners.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you.
Of course. Both of today's guests recognize that the ideals of disability life shouldn't be limited to just one type, shouldn't be limited to simply what's obvious to us. We should look beyond the surface, ask ourselves, what can be done for this person who has a condition, but it might not be something you see right on the surface? How can our program and our service benefit this person? What can we do to express what equality really means? It doesn't just mean a token gesture, you know. It means going beyond the minimum, taking steps to be the best that you can to provide opportunities and equality for individuals with disabilities. Therapeutic riding program, the fact that it takes into consideration emotional disabilities, which can be among the most difficult to recognize, it's really a very positive thing. And the fact that Anne wants to make sure that all the web audits, all the accessibility available, goes beyond just the minimum standards, shows a real inclination, a real passion for this work. It's one thing that's very common among individuals who work with the disability community. A real commitment, a real drive for the work they do. But it is really a question of going forward, taking the next step, working for the next advancement. We as a society should never rest on our laurels and say, this is the best we can do. Equality is not an afterthought, my friends. Equality should be taken into consideration with all things. Especially, this was resonating with me, in the web design, the audits. Once you lay the groundwork, once you have a sustainable model that's proven it can be of benefit, not just to the disabled community, to all of us, it becomes that much easier to build on the principles once they're there. It's easy to look at something like web accessibility to say, oh, this is impossible, or to look at someone who spent their whole life just curled up, limited muscle use and say, there's nothing we can do, so why bother even to try? These individuals, these organizations, are not willing to live with that. They're willing to take the step and to say, we can at least try this benefit. If it works, then it's added something to these people's lives. If it doesn't, we'll seek an alternative. We'll find something that does work. One must never stop the search. One must never say, I tried one thing, it didn't succeed, so there's no hope. That is a major pitfall in disability life, the idea of hopelessness. Hopelessness is a fleeting condition, in my opinion. Sure, something looks difficult today. Getting someone with limited muscle use up on a horse. Today, you might not see the step. The next day, you might not see the step. But even the smallest movement forward in time becomes more evident. Accessible web design also incorporates this. If you create this for everyone's benefit, in time, it is going to benefit someone. That's just simple logic. If you provide enough opportunities and enough students have the courage to say, I'm going to go and try this to see what my own strengths are, in time you will find that you really have created something. And if it's a sustainable type of model, the benefits are that you can just keep building on it. Better and better ideas. But the key to that is there must always be monitoring. We must always make sure that our principles and our actions really do match up. And for therapeutic writing, it's a matter of recognizing the progress and continuing to reach for it. A person with a disability who finds it painful to take one step, but does succeed, may hesitate at taking that step again. But the right encouragement, the right support, in time, they'll get there again. And it becomes that much easier. They become that much stronger. That's what it's all about. Recognizing the strengths, the gifts of individuals with disabilities. We must never forget these individuals have hopes, dreams, goals, all their own. And we as a society owe it to them, we owe it to ourselves, to offer that support, that encouragement, to be the one, maybe the only voice in their life that says, I believe in you. I believe you can create. I believe you can accomplish. So, I'm going to give you the resources and the support you need. Having something fully accessible is just a set of tools. The question is, what will each individual do with them? And that is the truly exhilarating thing. Because we as a society, when we create accessibility, we give them the tools and the opportunities. Then we get to see what they create, what they do with the gifts that they're expressing. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.